Just give one lecture today as usual, and then tomorrow Freddie will be giving two lectures. So we'll have no quantum information class tomorrow and two string theory. But I guess that's probably still subject to change, so check back for updates. So I guess we can start with questions. Did people understand quantum error correction, quantum key distribution yesterday?
Crypto analysis in crypto systems today?
I mean, it's a pretty big field. So you're talking about classical crypto, I assume. So there's also a field of quantum crypto. But classical crypto, I mean, it doesn't usually get its own department in universities. But I would say that It's a relatively big field. I mean, in that probably most computer science departments will have at least one or two cryptographers of some stripe or another. Now, the field of crypto, I mean, it kind of spans a range from theoretical cryptographers who study, security definitions and security proofs, and try to come up with new protocols with different kinds of properties or assumptions. To very practical cryptographers who very much care about exactly the details of how something cryptographic protocol is implemented, and whether you can shave a little bit off the encryption time and things like that. It also is a field that kind of shades into the field of security. It's not necessarily computer security, obviously. It's not a clear line between those of people interested in, operating systems, do they have bugs in them? How do you convince people to use good passwords? Maybe it's better to use some sort of biometric thing, things like that. So there's a whole kind of general area of information security and cryptography that, they're kind of different, but there's not a clear line between them, I would say. Okay. Any other questions?
With this device, this fault tolerance security.
Right, which one?
Fault tolerance.
Fault tolerance.
Yeah.
Right, okay. So, I definitely didn't go into really any details on fault tolerance. But the basic idea is you have a quantum error correcting code, and you have to put some stuff on top of it, some additional protocol, so that when the gates you're using are themselves faulty, so this includes the gates you're using for encoding and for error correction, that the answer you get at the end still has the properties of an error correcting code. In other words, that one gate error doesn't mess up everything. It's something that you can recover from using the error correction property. And then the big main result there is the threshold theorem, which says that if the error rate per gate or time step is low enough, you can do arbitrarily long quantum computations reliably. So those are the main things to know. And I didn't say all that much more than that yesterday, right? It was just maybe a taste of some of the issues involved of error propagation. You want to use transversal gates, things like that. But if there's something in particular that you were wanted more detail on, I could say a few words on that. No? Okay. Okay. So any other questions then? Okay. So today I wanted to do a somewhat different topic, in some ways simpler, in some ways much, much more complicated. Which is to talk about entanglement. Obviously, entanglement has already come up a number of times in this class. We used, EPR pairs and maximally entangled states to do quantum teleportation. I mentioned, I think, when we did quantum error correction, that instead of cloning the state to make three copies. We instead made an entangled state, right? In quantum algorithms, I warned that you didn't want to have entanglement with scratch bits, right? Because that would effectively decohere the state. Things like that. So entanglement is very intrinsic part of quantum information, but it's in some ways a very slippery topic. So there's a huge number of papers on entanglement because it turns out that describing and quantifying entanglement is actually very, very complicated. So I'm just going to restrict to the idea of bipartite entanglement. So you have Alice and Bob, and they share some state. And we're imagining this splitting. So it could be that Alice and Bob, they could each have multiple qubits. And in fact, they don't even have to have the same number of qubits. You know, Alice could have one qubit and Bob could have 10. Or, you know, their Hilbert space dimensions could be not powers of 2, anything like that. But the property of entanglement is really about entanglement over some subdivision of the Hilbert space into a tensor product of, usually we imagine, two people. But, of course, it doesn't have to literally be people. You can also talk about multipartite entanglement, where the quantum state is split among three people, or four people, or five people, or any number of people. But that becomes much, much more complicated, actually, even by the time you're already at three people, three-party entanglement. Let's see. So the other thing to bear in mind here is that A and B could each have their own subdivisions, right? So, I mean, I say that A could have multiple qubits. So you might imagine, like in a quantum computer, you have, you know, 10 different quantum registers, each of which involves a number of qubits. But you might want to talk about entanglement between one register and the other 9 registers. So in that case, we're lumping together these 9 registers. But at a different time, we might want to talk about entanglement between 2 different registers and the other 8 registers. Or we might not even want to talk about the whole computer. We might want to talk about entanglement between register 5 and register 7 and ignore the rest of the computer. So this is the type of thing that people talk about when they talk about entanglement. They talk about basically any kind of system where you're breaking it up, for bipartite entanglement, breaking it up into two pieces, and you want to know something about the relationship between these pieces. So first of all, let's start with pure states. So what does it mean for a pure state to be entangled? Or maybe more easily, what does it mean for a pure state to be unentangled? So in particular, pure state is unentangled if it is a tensor product state. So in general, you know, it could be tensor product, some psi A tensor phi B. Okay? And for pure states, anything that's not of this form is entangled. So for instance, if we have 3 qubits, okay, then let's say the first two are held by A. And the third one is held by B. Okay. So because we're splitting between A and B, the first two qubits are an entangled state between those two qubits. But when we consider the division into A and B, this is an unentangled state, right? It's a tensor product between the qubits held by A and the qubit held by B. But if we give the second qubit to Bob, so now we have 0A, 0B, well, let's call this A1, A2, A1, A2. So it'd be B1 and 0B2 plus 1A, 1B1, 0B2. This is now an entangled state between Alice and Bob. Okay, because it can no longer be written as a super, as a tensor product of something on Alice's side with something on Bob's side. Okay? Okay. So now let's go to mixed states. So for mixed state, the notion of entanglement is going to be a little more subtle. You can't use, so certainly if the mixed state is a tensor product of some state on Alice's side and some state on Bob's side, that could still be unentangled. But that's not sufficient to be unentangled, right? Because we also want to say that classical correlated states to not be entangled. Okay, so for instance, suppose we have the state P0, 0 Alice, 0 Bob, plus P1, 1 Alice, 1 Bob. Okay, so it's a mixed state where either Alice and Bob both have 0, or Alice and Bob both have 1. Okay? So this is a classical correlation. You can get this already in the classical world. In fact, since this is a diagonal density matrix in the standard basis, it's usually helpful to think of it just as classical bits. Okay? And entanglement is supposed to be a kind of uniquely quantum property. So if classical correlation counts as entanglement, then it wouldn't be a new concept, really. So we need a definition that takes this into account. And the answer is we say basically that a mixed quantum state is unentangled when it's separable. And a separable state is one which can be written as a mixture of tensor product states. So rho is sum over I, pi, psi I a, tensor, phi I b. Yeah, let me actually, yeah. So let me put the cats here. You could also have equally well, so I wrote pure states in this decomposition. You could also equally well have written it as a mixture of mixed states, tensor product of mixed states, right? Like sigma 1, sigma 2, sigma A, sigma B, something like that. But that would not be any different in the definition. Sigma A, for instance, we could again decompose into a mixture of pure states, right? You can always do that with a density matrix. And sigma B, we could decompose as a mixture of pure states. And then you just get another sum like this with more terms. Okay? So anyway, so this you see is going to be our notion of an unentangled mixed state. And a non-separable state is going to be our notion of an entangled mixed state. Okay? So there are any questions on this so far? Yeah?
Sorry, did you say you could have equally well written as a mixture of other mixed states?
Yeah, so for the definition, I could have said...
How do you know that the other mixed states can again be broken down into pure states? Like, that's not a given, right? Not all mixed states can be.
Yes, all mixed states can be written as a mixture of pure states. Okay.
In fact,
there's usually more than one way to do that.
But then how is that definition saying anything, really?
Oh, yeah, okay. So the important part here is as a mixture of tensor product states. So that's a non-trivial thing. So you could have said a tensor product of mixed states, so sigma A tensor sigma B. Okay, sigma AI tensor sigma BI. Or a mixture of tensor product pure states. That's going to be equivalent definition. But the fact that you have that tensor product there, that's the important part. Because if you look at a state, if you look at a state like 0, 0 plus 1, 1, okay, this is the stereotypical, prototypical, whatever, entangled state. And if you look at its density matrix, you'll see it's not separable. It cannot, in fact, be written this way. And, I mean, that actually follows immediately because if you have a pure state density matrix, there's only one way to write it as a mixture of pure states, as itself. I guess there's some trivial thing where you could have, a half of itself and then plus a half of itself, right? Things like that. But basically, there's only one way, and it's not a tensor product state, so it's not of this form. Now, the thing is that for states that are not pure, for states that really are mixed, there's more than one way to write it as a mixture. Okay? And some of those things might be separable and some of them might not. I mean, some of them, that's not wrong, that's not right to say. So the density, separability is a property of the density matrix. So some of the mixtures that give a certain density matrix might be of this form, explicitly showing that it's separable. And some other mixtures that give a density matrix might not be. So as a kind of easy example, suppose you take a uniformly mixed state. So that's going to be a quarter, 0, 0, A, B, B, plus a quarter, 1, 1, plus quarter 0, 1, plus quarter 1, 0. Okay? So the way I've written it this way, it's clear that it's separable. Right? Because each one of these states, so if you have a quarter, this is a tensor product state, and this is a tensor product state, and this is a tensor product state, and this is a tensor product state. Okay? And that's a example of this kind of decomposition. Okay? But this uniformly mixed state is also equal to a mixture of the four Bell states. Or really a mixture of any four states that form an orthonormal basis for this space. So remember here,
psi plus minus is equal to 0, 1 plus minus 0, phi plus minus 2, 0, 0 plus or minus 1, 1. Okay? And so these things are these pure states, these four pure states, are all entangled states. In fact, maximally entangled states. Here we have a mixture of four maximally entangled states. And yet the mixture as a whole is the same as this thing, and therefore it's separable. Okay? So you can mix together entangled states and get an unentangled state. When you're talking about mixed states, that's very possible. Okay? Yeah?
In a separable mixed state, should it be a double sum? Just like if...
No, I mean, so, the point is there can be correlation between the two, okay? So if you look at this example, right, whenever A is 0, B is 0, and whenever A is 1, B is 1, okay? So to write this, you really want to have a single sum that takes both sides, the A and the B side. Now, it's certainly okay if you have a double sum and what's happening on the A side is independent from on the B side. But that would be a state that's not just separable, but it's actually uncorrelated. Okay? So there's kind of different levels of things here. There's uncorrelated, where you don't even have classical correlations. There's correlated, where you have classical correlations but not entangling. And then there's entangled, where you have kind of a full-blown quantum thing going on. Yeah?
Isn't it, or do you have some intuition about the fact that making mixtures of entangled states makes one able to disentangle a quantum state? Because making a mixture is something classical.
Right. So, that's right. So, in some sense, this is one of those weird properties of quantum mechanics that you just have to get used to. Particularly the fact that density matrices have different decompositions. I think that leads to lots of kind of weird unintuitive stuff. But in this particular case, it's maybe not too bad, because if you start to think in terms of errors, right, suppose you have a maximally entangled state, like, you know, 0, 0, plus 1, 1, and then you start to get some noise on the state. And so you start to mix in, you get a phase, you maybe get some phase noise. Actually, this is enough to show the problem. You get some phase noise, and so sometimes the phase gets flipped. And sometimes you, instead of 0, 0, plus 1, 1, you get 0, 0, minus 1, 1. Okay? Eventually what happens is the state becomes unentangled. Because now you're mixing phi plus and phi minus. And if you have an equal mixture of phi plus and phi minus, the phase, you can no longer tell what it is at all. Right? And in fact, you end up with this state, with P0 and P1 equal to half. Okay? And so this maybe gives you some sense of how decoherence starts to make quantum states into classical states. Right? You lose entanglement when you start to mix in different kinds of things. And in fact, it turns out if you get sufficiently close to this maximally mixed state, and how close sufficiently close is depends on how many qubits you have, then you always have an unentangled state. Okay, so the more you mix, kind of the harder it is to be quantum. But you can still have a state that has, you know, a lot of different terms in it and still has entanglement. So it's, you know, it depends. Okay, any other questions? Okay. So one consequence of the fact that the density matrix has multiple decompositions, and that it could be that you have some decompositions where you can easily see that it's separable, and some where it's not at all obvious that it's separable, is that it's not so easy to tell if somebody gives you a mixed state whether it's separable or not. Okay. For a pure state, it's not too hard. I mean, they may give it to you in some relatively complicated form, but I'll tell you a relatively simple computational procedure in a minute that will calculate the whether it's entangled and actually how much entanglement there is in that state, which I haven't even defined yet. But for a mixed state, just telling whether it's separable or not, that's a very hard problem. And in fact, the question, I mean, there's some details on exactly how you define this question, but of whether a given state rho is separable is NP-hard. Okay? And not only is it NP-hard, it's NP-hard. The input size, you have to describe this whole D by D density matrix rho on a D-dimensional Hilbert space, right? So if you have N qubits, it's actually a 2 to the N by 2 to the N dimensional matrix. And that's the input size, right? So when we talk about NP-hard, we mean NP-hard as a function of the Hilbert space dimension. And as we discussed last week, you know, if you can solve an I didn't define NP-hard last week. So NP-hard is basically like NP-complete, except that you don't know that it's actually even in NP. Okay, so there's some little subtle issues here. Basically, you should think of it as NP-complete. I mean, basically, if somebody gives you this separable decomposition, you can easily check that it gives you that density matrix. Okay, so it's kind of basically like NP-complete, but it's not. There's some issues of exactly how you define it. You don't want to get. You don't want to say whether it's separable or not. Actually, you want to say whether it's close to separable state by some amount and stuff like that. So that's a subtle issue that's not really so important right now. Basically, think of this as saying it's an NP-complete problem. So that means that, as we discussed last week, that's a very hard problem. If you could solve it, you could solve any problem in NP. So we think that's going to take a time that's exponentially long in the input size. And in that case, that means if you have N qubits, the dimension is 2 to the N, and so the time it could take to solve this is actually exponential in 2 to the n. Okay, so that's really, really hard as a function of the number of qubits. Okay? Now, I mean, for a pure state, finding, you know, an arbitrary pure state, calculating anything about it, including whether it's a tensor product, you still have to deal with this exponential, right? If you have n qubits, there's 2 to the n amplitude. So even just to read the whole state takes a time 2 to the n. So figuring out whether a pure state is entangled is still going to take time that's exponential in n. But that's a kind of a function of the hardness of quantum mechanics rather than a function of the hardness of this entanglement problem. Okay. Whereas for separable, you have both hardnesses going on. Okay. Okay, so then in that case, let's talk about how you quantify the entanglement of a pure state. So for pure state, it's unentangled if it's a tensor product state, okay? And what that means is that we can tell whether it's entangled or not by looking at the trace over Alice's side or over Bob's side, okay? And if the partial trace, in other words. And so if we take the partial trace over Alice's side, we're left only with Bob's qubit or qubits, and those are in a pure state, right? Or vice versa, if we throw away Bob's side, we're left with Alice's side only, also a pure state. So what we want to do to quantify entanglement is look at Alice's density matrix, or equivalently Bob's, and see how mixed it is. So Ben Schumacher did partial trace in the class, right? Yes? Okay. Okay. So this is not... So the notion of getting rid of one person and starting with a pure state and ending up with a possibly mixed state, that's not new to you. Okay. And what we're going to do is we're going to take advantage of that. Okay? And so in particular, if we start with the state psi on AB, we're going to look at rho A, which is the trace over B of psi. Okay, and how do we tell how mixed rho is? Well, if it has, you know, one eigenvalue, that's one, and the others are all zero, it's pure. If it has eigenvalues that are kind of a lot of different eigenvalues or eigenvalues that are very uniformly spread, something like that, a lot of non-zero eigenvalues, for instance, it'll be a very mixed state. And in particular, it turns out that the best way probably, I mean, there's multiple different ways you could quantify this. But the best way to quantify pure state entanglement is by looking at the entropy. So the entanglement of a pure state is given by the entropy S of rho A. And of course, that's equal to minus trace rho A log rho A. And normally, when I do logs like this, I'm going to take them base 2, because we're doing kind of an information theory subject. We like to put everything in binary. But obviously, if you're, you know, if you're doing thermodynamics or something, you talk about the von Neumann entropy, you're usually going to do natural log. But you know, then there's also you know a Boltzmann constant factor or something in here to get the units arranged. But you know, changing the base of the log just puts constant factors out front. Okay, so that's in some sense not really important to this general question. In any case, in the field of quantum information theory, you almost always use log base 2. Okay. You look like you want to ask a question. Okay.
What do you mean by log of a tensor image?
Ah, okay.
Term by term or?
Right. So, so the easiest way to do this is to diagonalize the density matrix and take the log of the diagonal elements. Okay. Now, obviously, you have to be careful in a formula like this. If you have if you have a zero eigenvalue. Right, because log of 0, that's going to be minus infinity. But we actually take the combination rho log rho. So rho goes to 0. So let me skip ahead to tomorrow. So I guess it'll be Friday. But so in classical information theory, you have the Shannon entropy. So this is a little easier to talk about because we don't have the matrices. And so the Shannon entropy is of a random variable, but basically we have of some random variable x, which is outcome I with probability pi. And so the Shannon entropy of x is going to be minus the sum over I of pi log pi. Okay? So in this formula, and again, it's base 2, usually. So in this formula, it's maybe obvious that you're supposed to ignore the cases where pi is equal to 0, because they never happen here. And you can kind of justify that by taking the limit as pi goes to 0. Right, for a specific value of I, this will go to 0 faster than this. Right? Little calculus exercise that the limit as x goes to 0 of x log x is equal to 0. This thing you can see is a generalization of this thing to matrices. Okay, and there's some interesting physics kind of exploiting this idea to examine Maxwell's demon. But the point is that there's the connection between the von Neumann entropy, which appears in quantum mechanics and thermodynamics of quantum systems, and the classical information theoretic entropy. So the simplest way to calculate this is just, as I said, to diagonalize rho A, and then really what you're computing is this, again, for the eigenvalues of rho A. Okay? The other way you can define this is as a power series. Log has a power series. You can use the same power series and plug in matrices, just like you can define the exponential of a matrix by taking the power series and plugging the matrix into the power series. Yeah?
But that's, again, only valid if it doesn't have any zero eigenvalues.
Yeah, that's right. So you have to be, so you have to be a little careful to actually define it globally. I think the technically correct way to do that is you'll perturb the eigenvalues a little bit so that they're non-zero, and then you can take the limit of this thing, this whole formula, as you go to the correct density matrix.
Can I think of this something like this as being the log of rho A to the power rho A, and 0 to 0 is 1?
So there's another kind of entropy called the Renyi entropy, which is actually... The Renyi entropy is actually a family where you actually are taking the trace of rho A to some power. Okay? And if you have the Renyi entropy rho A to the 1 plus epsilon and take epsilon to 0, that's actually basically, I don't remember the actual definition of Renyi entropy, but there may be like a another 1 over a power of 1 over 1 plus epsilon. But in any case, this is kind of like the limit as where you're taking that 1 plus epsilon where epsilon goes to 0. Because this is like kind of, it's not quite the 0th power of rho A. It's just a little bit, but it's between the actual 0th power and any non-zero power. Was that what you were asking?
No, exactly. I think, is it something like that you can pull the rho A inside of the log? So the rho A that's in front. So if you would be you could pull it inside of the log. I'm not sure if this is valid for power series. Matrices.
Taking a matrix to the power of a matrix is actually kind of fishy. That's something I don't know how to do. I'm not sure there is a sensible definition of that. But again, if you're diagonalizing it, then you can say it down here, and it's okay. Yeah, that's what I said. That's the easiest thing to do, is just to diagonalize it and you get this. But you don't have to do that. Okay. So we have here this entropy, and you can compute it in some reasonable amount of time if you can diagonalize the matrix. And in the case of Hermitian density matrix, it's always at least possible, right? So as a side note, diagonalizing a matrix takes a time that's like, actually I forget, it's like if you have a d-dimensional matrix, d by d matrix, I think it takes time about d squared to diagonalize. So it's a polynomial thing. So you can compute this entanglement, and that tells you how much entanglement there is in a pure state. But let me just say a few properties of entropy. I think Ben Schumacher said something about entropy, but maybe not the same things I'm going to need. He talked about it in quantum mechanics. Seems you kind of remember that. I don't know what he said. But anyway, maybe there'll be overlap, maybe not. So let's write down some properties of the entropy. So I won't really be using all of these, but I think they're good things to know. Okay. So on Hilbert space of dimension D, S of rho is less than or equal to D. Sorry, less than or equal to log D. Okay? And you achieve log D, in fact, if and only if you have the uniformly mixed state. Okay, and you can calculate that. The uniformly mixed state, in fact, has entropy log D. Property B, and this is one that we'll use right away. S of rho is equal to 0 if and only if rho is pure. Okay? So again, if you think of diagonalizing rho, the only way to get S of rho equals 0 is if you're taking log of 1 in here. Right? And that means that there's only one eigenvalue and the rest is 0 because rho has trace 1. And that's the case, remember, where you have a tensor product state. And so when you trace over one party, you get a pure state. These properties of entropy, of course, are not dependent on it being, you know, partial trace of some possibly entangled state, but general properties of entropy. But we'll need, but using this property, you can immediately see that entropy actually can tell you definitely whether the state is pure or not, and whether therefore a pure state is entangled or not. Okay. So now some more advanced properties. So basically the triangle inequality, but in this context it's called, I guess, the Araki-Lieb inequality. S of AB is greater than or equal to S of A minus S of B. So now we're starting to talk about density matrices that are split, again, between two people, Alice and Bob. And if this is saying that if you take the density matrix of the whole system, Alice and Bob combined, that the entropy of that is at least equal to the entropy of Alice minus the entropy of Bob, absolute value. So this is Alice's density matrix alone and Bob's density matrix alone. And then we have D, which is called subadditivity. And it says that S of the combined density matrix is less than or equal to the sum, the entropy of the term. So this is the entropy matrix of A and the entropy of density matrix of B. So this is not so hard to understand. It's saying that if the kind of the amount of mixedness between Alice and Bob together is at most the mixedness of Alice plus the mixedness of Bob. Right? So there's not additional sources of random mixedness that are coming from outside. Yeah.
When is the equality?
In this case? I believe, I'm not certain of this, but I believe in this case the equality holds if and only if it's a tensor product state. Not necessarily a pure tensor product state. It could be a mixed tensor product state. But I think that's right. Because otherwise you have some classical correlation between Alice and Bob, and kind of some of the randomness that's involved in A is redundant with some of the randomness that's involved in B. Okay? And then the last property I will write down is in the quantum case quite difficult to prove, but it can be very useful sometimes. It's called strong subadditivity. And strong subadditivity is a case where you have three parties, A, B, and C, and you get this inequality. S of ABC plus S of B is less than or equal to S of AB plus S of BC. Okay. So, oh yeah.
Does this continue? I mean,
Well, actually, there are more properties of entropy that I haven't written down. For instance, there's a, you know, there's like a concavity property where if you have the mixture of two different, a convex mixture of two different density matrices, then you know, you get an inequality comparing that to the kind of the average of the entropies of the individual density matrices. There's probably lots more properties of entropy. The entropy is. Right. So I believe I misunderstood the question. So I believe that the four-party version of strong subadditivity can be derived directly from this three-party version, whereas the three-party version doesn't follow immediately from this two-party version. It's in fact much harder to prove. You need to do other stuff. So that's why it's considered kind of a separate thing, and normally people don't talk about the other ones. I think so. I'm not really an expert in that, but okay. So in particular, one thing I want to point out here is that by property C, so if we have a global mixed state, a global pure state, then S of AB is 0. Well, that's by property 2, property B. And if S of AB is 0, then the absolute value of SA minus SB here has to also be 0. In particular, SA has to equal SB. So in particular over here, where we have a global pure state, we know that S of rho A is equal to S of rho B. And so it doesn't really matter whether we look at Alice's density matrix or Bob's density matrix. When we're using the entropy to calculate how much entanglement we have, in fact, it's equal. Yeah?
How about this property EB established?
Property E. Oh, it's pretty complicated, actually. This is a, yeah. So the properties A through D are not too hard, but property E requires a pretty long proof. And yeah, I mean, it's certainly not something I could summarize quickly, and you'd have to look it up. I mean, it's like at least a few pages of math.
It doesn't have any relation with property
G. Well, it has a relation. It's a generalization of it, but it doesn't follow immediately. In the classical case, I guess there's a strong subadditivity property for the classical Shannon entropy. But that's much, much easier to prove, and I think it does follow pretty much immediately. But in the quantum case, it's pretty non-trivial. Okay? Other questions? Okay, so let me say then a few words about why we like this as a measure of entanglement. So first of all, the point I made earlier, that the entropy of rho A is, the entropy of rho A is 0 if and only if rho is pure. Rho A is pure, which means that the entropy of rho A is 0 if and only if the original pure state was a product state. So that's one good reason. So this is 0 for unentangled states, and non-zero for entangled states. Okay, so it's a sensitive measure. It actually tells the difference between entangled and unentangled. So the other thing is that in this scenario where we have two people, we like to imagine that they can do things locally, and all we're really interested about is the entanglement and correlation between them, right? So anything locally that they do shouldn't change the amount of entanglement they have between them. And so in particular, the entropy rho of S of rho A doesn't change under local unitaries on Alice and Bob. Okay? So if Alice does some unitary on her side and Bob does some unitary on his side, well, the entropy won't change. And you can see that because, well, certainly if Bob does something, it's not going to change Alice's density matrix. If Alice does something, her density matrix will change. Of course, Bob's density matrix won't change, and we know the entropy is the same. Another way to see this is that this entropy is just a function of the eigenvalues. And if you do a unitary, the eigenvalues don't change. Now, of course, if you do a unitary that mixes Alice and Bob's side, like a controlled knot from Alice's qubit to Bob's qubit, then the density matrix, then the global density matrix eigenvalues won't change. But the one on Alice's side, they will. Okay, and the entropy can change then. But then you're no longer in this kind of situation of having local unitaries. Okay. And then the third property that makes it really a measure of entanglement and not just correlations is that it is non-increasing under what's called LOCC, which means local operations, and is actually not increasing on average, I should say, and classical communication. So the LOCC model is you have Alice and Bob, and you know they might share some entangled state. And they can talk back and forth. They can do anything they want on their own side. That's the LO part. And so that includes making measurements, making unitary, doing unitaries, stuff like that. We already know that doing unitaries is not going to change the entropy. But if they do a measurement, of course, they no longer that will change their local density matrix. And so, you know, with some probability they'll get one state, with some probability they'll get a different state. It's important I put here on average because it turns out actually that you can make measurements where some measurement results that Alice and Bob could do would in fact change the entropy, would in fact increase the entropy. But the point is that that when they do that measurement, other outcomes that they could get will decrease the entropy. And so on average, it would be non-increasing. And then they can talk back and forth and tell each other what they got as a result of their measurements. Classical communication, that's the CC. Okay? And so the point of this model is it kind of, it encapsulates that everything that Alice and Bob can do that doesn't involve a new quantum resource. So the only quantum resource they have, shared quantum resource, is an entangled state. If they have a quantum channel between them, they could create new entangled states and increase the amount of entanglement. But without that, they can't. Yeah?
What exactly, how do you quantify classical versus quantum communication?
What do you mean? Frequently, we just like to think of them as totally separate things. So classical, you can send just bits. Quantum, you can send qubits. Of course, you know, in the real world, even classical communication has underlying quantum stuff going on. So you can just think of it as a quantum channel where you have complete phase noise. And so it becomes basically just like classical bits again.
So where you don't communicate entanglements, that's what you sort of...
Right, so that's one function here, that you cannot communicate entanglement that way. Okay, let's see. So the other thing to point out is that if Alice and Bob don't start with any kind of entangled state, in fact, even if they start uncorrelated, and they can only do LOCC, Well, they can certainly create classically correlated states, right? Because Alice can flip a coin. With probability P0, she gets 0. With probability P1, she gets 1. And then she tells Bob what she got. Right? That's perfectly allowed over a classical communications channel. So they can certainly create this state, for instance. But they can't create a maximally entangled state, like 5+. Okay? And in fact, what you can do with LOCC is Alice and Bob can only create separable states. And any separable state they can create, okay? They can create it by looking in this decomposition, the one that makes the separable nature obvious. And Alice says, okay, I'll flip a coin with probability pi, I'll get outcome I. And then I'll create the state psi I. I'll send I to Bob, and Bob can create the state phi I. Then I'll throw away my coin, and all we have left is this separable mixed state. Okay? But that protocol that I said is basically all they can do. So anything they do is going to be a separable state. Okay? Okay. So I'm almost out of time, but I just want to say a few words about quantifying entanglement for mixed states. So for pure states, there's a nice theory of it. And it's relatively simple. There's a nice quantification in terms of the entropy. You can go further and say, well, suppose we have one entangled pure state. Can we convert it using LOCC to a different entangled pure state? That's a question we know how to answer. For mixed states, the situation is much, much worse. It turns out there's not, the entropy is kind of the unique sensible measure of entanglement for pure states. For mixed states, there isn't a unique sensible measure. There's lots of different measures that people have come up with. And they all have advantages and disadvantages. So I'm just going to define a couple of them and say a few words. And that will be it for today. And give you some idea of the problems involved. So one kind of sensible notion of entanglement for mixed states is the entanglement of formation. So in the case of a separable state, we could write it as a mixture of tensor product states. So we didn't need any entanglement to create it using LOCC. But if we have an entangled state, a non-separable state, then we need some entanglement to create it, right? So the idea of the entanglement formation is you define it basically as the minimal amount of entanglement needed to create the state. So in particular, we can say that EF of rho AB is equal to the minimum over ensembles PI psi I. And psi I is a bipartite pure state of some PI S of, I called it sigma AI. Okay. Where rho AB is equal to sum over I PI psi I. And sigma AI is the partial trace of psi I. Okay? So the point is, this thing, S of sigma ai, is the entropy of this pure state, psi I. Okay? The entanglement of this pure state. And all I'm doing is I'm averaging it. Okay? And then, there's lots of different decompositions into pure states that will give you a particular mixed state. And so what you're saying is the entropy of formation is the one that uses the best ensemble, that requires the least entanglement. Okay? So this seems like a pretty sensible measure. Unfortunately, of course, it's going to be hard to compute, because even just telling whether the state is separable or not, that's hard. But it seems reasonable to start with. Okay, but there's various properties to it. So for instance, you can get some weird stuff going on. So for entropy, I mean, with subadditivity, remember, if you have, if you take two states, that, and you have the tensor product of the two states, remember I said that the equality condition is when it's a tensor product state. And certainly, like I said, I wasn't 100% sure that's the only case you can get equality. But certainly, if you have the entropy of a tensor product, the entropy is the sum. Okay? But in the case of entanglement of formation, that's not true. So in particular, there are cases where the entropy of rho tensor sigma, entropy of formation, is less than, strictly less than, strictly less than the entropy of formation of rho plus the entropy of formation of sigma. So basically, you get a discount on entanglement if you create both of these at the same time. So what that means is that sometimes you might want to instead calculate what's called nowadays the entanglement cost, which is the regularized entanglement of formation . So E sub C of rho AB is the limit as n goes to infinity of 1 over n the entanglement of formation of rho AB tensor n. So you take n copies of rho AB, and it might be cheaper to make those n copies than n times the cost of making one copy. Okay? And as n gets larger and larger, you don't know, it might get easier again. We don't really know this. So it's only relatively recently discovered for sure. For a long time people thought that entanglement of formation was going to be additive. But it turns out it's not. And that was just discovered a few years ago. So we haven't fully grasped exactly what can happen with this non-additivity. But the upshot is that it looks like the only way to define kind of a relatively well-behaved thing is to take this limit. Okay? And even this, and where I said this thing is going to be NP hard to compute, this thing, well, we don't know how to compute it at all, because we don't know how many copies you have to look at in order to get a good approximation. Okay? So we don't really even know an inefficient way to calculate the entropy cost, the entanglement cost in general. Okay? So I don't want to say too much more, but just so that you understand that the story is even more complicated than this. So entanglement of formation, we defined in terms of how much entanglement you need to create the state. But you can also, a very sensible measure to look at is by going the other way, where you have an entangled state. You know, I mean, you might know it's a non-separable state, but to quantify the amount of entanglement in it, you might say, how much pure state entanglement can I get out of it? And it turns out that the distillable entanglement, well, it certainly should be always less than the entanglement of formation, right? Because the amount of entanglement, otherwise you could create entanglement out of nothing, right? By creating this state using the entanglement of formation and then using finding the distillable entanglement to get out pure state entanglement. If it was more than what you put in, then you're making it. But really, it has to, so it has to be less than or equal to. But definitely there's cases where it's less than. Strictly less than. And there's even cases which are called bound entangled state, where the distillable entanglement is zero and the entanglement of formation is non-zero. So it requires entanglement to make the states, but you can't actually get any entanglement out of them. And again, the distillable entanglement is not additive. So normally it's actually defined as kind of a limit. Even then it's not additive. Even the regularized version of the syllable entanglement is not additive. So there's all sorts of weird stuff that can go on. That's enough for today. Presumably, as I said, stay updated. But the current plan, no quantum information class tomorrow. Instead, there'll be two string theory classes. And so then I will see you again on Friday.